Welcome everybody back to the Friday edition of the Damage Report. I got through it eventually. Brett's here. Hey, Brett.
Hey, came up with a new, just sitting here, new idea for Fridays with Brett should be end it with Ehrlich. We end the week with Ehrlich, end it with Ehrlich. They all both start with E's, and that's all you need is two similar letters.
End it with Ehrlich.
End it with Ehrlich.
It's like your show for the end of the world.
Yep, end it with Ehrlich. Brett Cetera is the other thing, but I've been using that for many times. Brett Cetera? All right, we'll do Brett Cetera.
Well, we're ending it. We're finally ending it, okay? I can't take any more. We're ending it with Ehrlich with a great show, though.
I do feel good about it.
So we are gonna start off with a little bit from the anonymous book about Trump, supposedly from a senior administration official. That'll be fun. But later on, Michael Bloomberg is now in the race, and he actually has a supporter. We'll reveal who that is a little bit later on. Andrew Yang has his first ever TV commercial. We are going to review it. Glenn Beck is back to what he does best, which is out crazing everyone else. And then we're gonna be closing out the show the way you should. Light, to get you into the weekend, by letting you know about one of the most horrible people in America in the past few years. So that's gonna be a little bit scary, but we'll get through it together. Before all that though, let's start off with Trump and his new favorite reading material. You might recall a senior administration official who was very much anonymous wrote an op-ed some time ago talking about what needed to be done to control Donald Trump. Those on the inside who don't like Trump or even support some of his worst excesses, but are nudging him in the right direction. Well, that official is now back, still anonymous, with a book, a warning. And it reveals quite a bit about the goings on inside of the White House. We're gonna break down some of this. But before we get into the specifics, just briefly, I feel a little bit uncomfortable with this person who we can't confirm who they are, saying things that they don't have to personally really go on the record about, which I know happens, but now it's a whole book.
So what are you worried about? The fundamental
that they will exaggerate.
Right, but what are you worried about? The fundamental undermining of the credibility of media? That has been happening for quite some time. Yeah. And I would say even if you had the person's name, face, fingerprints, transcripts, video of them having gone through all this, there would still be a vast attempt to undermine their credibility from the Trump administration, which is why I appreciate the concept of this, even though I do agree with the idea that this person, I would rather know who it is.
I think they should just come out. And we're gonna close out this segment with their reason for why they're not coming out, and we'll review that.
But really quickly, I do appreciate this as like an artistic exercise in from the other side, just throwing out wildly unsubstantiable claims about what happened in the Trump White House, because that's what Trump does on a daily basis.
That's true.
And this is just throwing, like, puking more images into the word cloud.
Yes. So why don't we get ready to spew? The book contains a handful of startling assertions that are not backed up with evidence, such as a claim that if a majority of the cabinet were prepared to remove Trump from office under the 25th Amendment, Vice President Pence would have been supportive. Pence denied this on Thursday, telling reporters, "I never heard anything in my time as vice president about the 25th Amendment, and why would I?" Which is not actually a direct, like it wasn't.
Yeah, he's not rebuffing that claim.
Not exactly.
It's like, why would I? You absolutely would if you turned on a TV right now. Mm-hmm. The 25th Amendment, I mean, it is about reasons to get rid of a president.
Yes, and we have a few.
And that's just been a giant subject in the media and in the discussion of America, particularly you saying, no, don't get rid of him. Though he would love it, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
The reason he hasn't heard anything, maybe, is because his head's been in the sand the entire time.
Exactly. Nobody knows where he is or where he's been. Senior Trump administration officials considered resigning in mass numbers last year, apparently. So they waited a while in a quote, midnight self-massacre to sound end it with Ehrlich. To sound a public
the nuns
alarm.
Told me not to do a midnight self-massacre.
Oh my God. To sound a public alarm about President Trump's conduct, but rejected the idea because they believed it would further destabilize an already teetering government. Yeah, it might. If everybody resigned, it might.
I said this last week, just like the idea of resign culture being like, I'm out. How I'm gonna send a message is to leave so you can go on with your like concentrated sauce of crazy without me being the one in there to say, maybe we shouldn't do this.
And
this
in fact, replacing me with someone who will agree with you on everything.
Right, there's a number of people who were there who previously, after Trump said something ridiculous and the door closed on his way out of the room where he spewed his ridiculousness, there were responsible people in Washington and in the White House who said, all right, nobody do what he just said.
Yeah.
Now, if you get rid of those people, you are followed up. You're left with someone who says, yeah, let's just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so a little bit more on the president's temperament from an insider who got to see it, supposedly. The author describes Trump careening from one self-inflicted crisis to the next, quote, like a 12-year-old in an air traffic control tower, pushing the buttons of government indiscriminately, indifferent to the planes skidding across the runway and the flights frantically diverting away from the airport. So I don't know much about the identity of this senior administration official, but when they land on a metaphor, they run with it. Sorry, they fly with it. They take off and then they soar across America with it. But yeah, that's, I mean, everybody knows that though. That doesn't take insider knowledge.
Right. Yeah, and that's just a pull quote. They put in articles about it that was meant to convey that exact image, which is why I like this as like performance art.
Yeah.
To say, here, I'm just gonna flood the airwaves with metaphors.
Uh-huh.
And that's it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm fine. Yes, everyone who's been following news lately has felt this. Mm-hmm. Many reasonable people would say, yeah, that's basically what I've been experiencing. And it scares the hell out of me. But Trump supporters would say, yeah, but those planes are all full of Washington swamp creatures. Mm-hmm. And crash those puppies immediately, please.
Yeah. Yeah, that's dark imagery. Okay, so a little bit more in that same vein, I guess. Sort of just trying to paint a picture. It is, like you said, performance art. It's like showing up at the nursing home at daybreak to find your elderly uncle running pantsless across the courtyard and cursing loudly about the cafeteria food as worried attendants try to catch him. You're stunned, amused, and embarrassed all at the same time. Only your uncle probably wouldn't do it every single day. His words aren't broadcast to the public, and he doesn't have to lead the US government once he puts his pants on.
We have no confirmation that as Trump is leading the US government, he does have his pants on.
I hope so.
Yeah, he sits at that Resolute desk,
mm-hmm.
might not have pants on.
Yeah, yeah. Another great metaphor. Good job, Anonymous.
But that's okay.
Write some kids' books after this.
That's what makes me feel, I don't know, man. Like if you're working in the White House, say this is all true and this is actually a senior White House official, as it probably is, or someone at least in the White House, because I'm pretty sure the New York Times wouldn't have published that original op-ed if it wasn't confirmable that it was someone inside there. But that's what I would do. If I worked in a crazy place, I would come up with tons of metaphors for how crazy it is, because that's the only way I could stay sane. It would give me just a little creative outlet in an otherwise demoralizing experience.
Yeah, it's like a person in long-term solitary confinement carving on the walls to stay sane, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I agree with you. The worst case scenario with Anonymous is not that this person wasn't in the White House. That's not conceivable to me. Mm-hmm. But how senior were they? How long were they there? That we can't confirm.
Are they still there? Is it Kellyanne Conway? How Kellyanne Conway is it? How many Kellyanne Conways are there writing this? I prefer to believe that.
I prefer
to believe that it's Kellyanne Conway.
I doubt it. And also, this person is giving a critical look at the president, but that does not mean that this person is an objectively good person through some sense, or doesn't support some elements of Trump's agenda. But putting out the book makes it seem like this is a hero embedded in enemy territory.
Yeah, but we've all, I mean, that is one of the central themes of the last 4 to 5 years is the in a realignment era. Where you find yourself trying to figure out who's on your side.
What allies are okay.
And misery acquaints a man with strange bedfellows. And I found myself saying,
nice.
I found myself saying like, oh my God, I want John Bolton to testify my side. Like that kind of stuff. Like Anthony Scaramucci right now is speaking truth, ?
Yeah.
I'm still angry.
It's weird.
But that's the kind of stuff. And I would just like to say that in terms of various books that have been published, I'm gonna read you some names of books published that were supposed to be bombshells that changed the game. The Devil's Bargain about the Trump White House. Fire and Fury.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse than you think. Which one's the David K? It's even worse than you think what the Trump administration is doing to America by David K. Johnston. Killing the Deep State, that's one on his side.
I would assume so, yeah.
Liars, Leakers, and Liberals.
That's Judge Jeanine Pirro.
That's Pirro.
It is. Yes.
Unhinged, under fire, fear, and team of vipers.
So I think I know where they're going with the team of vipers.
We've had, like yeah, like probably Top Gun. So team of vipers though is like the imagery we've had, you've read two metaphors. There's entire books with titles that are metaphors.
Yeah.
Have those images and those substantiated first accounts of experiences in the White House, have that changed anything?
Yeah, no, we're good now.
Oh, I didn't know.
We're good.
Sorry,
we're
getting better. Too busy reading.
So really fast, really fast. So he says that Trump used a Hispanic accent to say, we get these women coming in with like seven children. They're saying, oh, please help, my husband left me. They're useless. They didn't do anything for our country. At least if they came in with a husband, we could put them in the fields to pick corn or something. That is very believable. It's not gonna change anyone's mind. He said at one point, can we just get rid of the judges? Let's get rid of the expletive judges. There shouldn't be any at all, really. I buy that too, but it's probably just hyperbole, who knows? He says that Trump, a lot of people spending time with him get uncomfortable by what they witness because he stumbles, slurs, gets confused, is easily irritated, has trouble synthesizing information or pronouncing what I just said, not occasionally, but with regularity. And yeah, we've all noticed weird things that he's done where he's walked on the tarmac in a random direction and he's been confused about what he was saying. But also on the other hand, corn pop. So we've all got issues. But finally, really fast, he says, I've decided to publish this anonymously, he or she, I guess, it could be Kellyanne Conway. I decided to publish this anonymously because this debate is not about me, it's about us. What are you taking that from Bernie Sanders? It is about how we want the presidency to reflect our country, and that is where the discussion should center. Some will call this cowardice. My feelings are not hurt by the accusation, nor am I unprepared to attach my name to criticism of President Trump. I may do so in due course. Well, it's been a while.
Who wrote the primary colors? It was like, I forget, but there was a book about the experience from within, a essentially fictionalized version, but based on very apparent reality of the Clinton campaign. It started out as anonymous. It turned out it was more profitable in the long run for that person to get up, get a lot of PR under the anonymous label, then reveal themselves. Then it became a movie with John Travolta.
And maybe this will too.
And Kellyanne Conway.
So consider that a warning, but one you can't really verify.
Speaking of a warning, oh, that's what you were doing there.
I did.
Got it. I'll hammer out the love between the brothers. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know what that is though.
It's a song that's like, I'll hammer out danger, I'll hammer out a warning. We still going?
I guess so. I was just gonna let you, I was gonna see how long is Brett Ehrlich. You know
when
what I'd
come
like to
back,
do? I'd like to end it with Ehrlich actually.
When we come back, we got an interview with an We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
When a big IPCC report came out making clear the climate emergency that we find ourselves facing, it didn't just lead to a number of different people realizing that we've got to do something about this and spurring activism and all of that. It might have influenced a number of different people to run for office for the first time. And we might have an example of that actually right now with a candidate who's going to be joining us, a congressional candidate from New Jersey's 9th District, Zena Spazakis. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on.
Very glad to have you on. And I'd like to start talking with you about climate change because you have a background having to do with these sorts of issues. And so tell me about the path from you becoming a regular citizen to someone who's now seeking a congressional office.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned the UN's IPCC report. That really is what was the catalyst for me. You know, when you have a collection of the world's best scientists telling you you've got about 12 years to cut your emissions by about half, you sort of sit up and take notice. And that's when I really started to think that, you know, what I was doing, whether it was my business work, I work for a clean energy startup, and my environmental activism wasn't pushing the needle fast enough. And as a mother, I was compelled to act. And I thought the best way that I could do this is to bring sort of my business, my science expertise to Congress, my energy policy expertise to Congress, and really start pushing the needle. I looked around, I looked at my incumbent's voting record and his history on climate. I found it less than lacking, and I just decided to file in early January, okay. and there I am.
So let's give people an idea of what you might be as a congressperson. So on this issue, for instance, are there bills being put forward or things you've heard our elected representatives talking about that you would like to get involved in? And are there ways that you'd like to potentially go farther based on your experience in the area and what you'd like to see done in regards to climate change?
Well, there's a number of immediate things that we should be doing. I mean, the Green New Deal was the perfect thing that happened at the perfect time. It got the conversation going to the point where you even have Republicans talking about the climate at this point. My whole thing for getting into this race is it was a resolution, and what we need to actually start doing right now is putting some actual policies and implementing some laws against that. Everything from, you know, pushing the $15 billion that currently go to fossil fuel subsidies each and every year to a mature industry, you know, redirecting them into research and development, into renewables, redirecting them into infrastructure projects so we can start tapping some of these renewables, some of these wind resources that we have running up and down the middle of the country that are in remote places that we need to get to our big cities. There are a number of things that we could start doing almost immediately. There are short-term projects, and then there are longer-term projects. And it is we're at a situation where we kind of need all hands on deck. That's one side of it. The other side of it is we have to stop. We have to keep it in the ground. We have to stop extracting resources from our planet like we own it. We don't. We're stewards of it. We need to put moratoriums on fossil fuel projects immediately. And we need to start putting financial incentives into people transitioning to cleaner technologies, frankly.
Okay. Now, the current incumbent, so you've got Bill Pascrell, who's been the incumbent there for, depending on how you define the district, for some time at the very least. On this issue, on other related issues, what do people need to know about what he has represented as the congressperson?
Well, he likes to call himself as a progressive. He is anything but. If you actually look at the policies, he will not support Medicare for All. He did support the Green New Deal, but he supported it about 1 week after I got some positive press running against him as an environmentalist. So coincidental timing? Who knows? He has since supporting the Green New Deal, we've asked them as activists to come out with a moratorium on fossil fuel projects right here in the state of New Jersey. He refuses to do so. So it's, you know, he calls himself a progressive. He's a progressive. I would say he pays lip service to the progressive movement because this district is highly blue. But his, you know, we could talk about some, you know, whether it's Black Lives Matter movements, whether it's mass incarceration or anything else. He is not a progressive. I call him a centrist. He is, and you know, the reason I'm in this race is because I call him a climate delayer. We have a lot of Democrats in Congress who have known about the problem, agree that it is a problem, but have spent decades sitting on their hands doing absolutely nothing while our opportunity to really address it has come and gone. Right now, we cannot reverse it in this generation. We could have when we knew about it decades ago, when they knew about it decades ago, but they have delayed action to the point where right now, the best we can do is to slow it down. You know, I almost prefer a climate denier, because at least with a climate denier, you know what you're getting. With a climate delayer, if you're voting Democrat, you would expect them to do something, and they haven't.
You know, it's funny. I said almost the exact same thing on the show, I think yesterday or the day before. So I certainly agree with you there.
Yeah.
And look, the reason I wanted to focus on this topic is because obviously you have a background in this area, and it's one of the most things you're passionate about as a candidate. But if people would like to learn more about your platform, where can they go to find out where you stand on a number of different issues?
To our website, it's www.zina4congress.com. And if you just Google me, you'll see press releases and my moratorium statements. I had an op-ed on Medicare for All, so
awesome.
I'm out there in the district. And actually, yesterday we got a brand new Congress endorsement for the 2020 slate.
Awesome.
So
well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Zina Spazakis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, the Democratic presidential primary has a new contender. Michael Bloomberg doesn't have much of a built-in constituency, but there is one big fan we wanna reveal to you after this. In this Democratic primary, there are a lot of people running, and voters have had a lot of options. But what they haven't had is someone incredibly disconnected from the realities of working class Americans who believes that billions of dollars can stand in for a lifetime of activism and having the right positions. But maybe now, Michael Bloomberg might be running. He apparently is prepared to enter presidential races before, but never actually put his name on a state ballot. Now, he's apparently, because of how early you have to do it, getting on the ballot for Alabama, indicating not definitely he's gonna run, but he's taking it pretty seriously. So it's an exciting day for the Democratic primary, Brett Ehrlich.
I mean, come on, dude. This process will be one of the more infuriating things to watch if you are not working currently in DC or New York on a news show or for a newspaper.
Yeah.
Because everything I've seen around it has just been the most pure embodiment of what's wrong with media bubbles since watching Trump rallies. Like that's the other side of it. This is the version on the left, I guess.
Well,
Of not the Trump
not
rally.
Not on the right.
But not on the, but for this, it's people saying, there's so many people right now in media who are like, perfect, got it. Possible solution, white knight coming to the rescue.
Well, why don't we demonstrate the principle that you're talking about right now? Because many people responded to this announcement by at first tweeting, okay, boomer, which quickly became okay, bloomer, which is just perfect.
That's funny.
But he does have a fan, and that fan has a show, and here's a little bit from that show.
Guns and climate. Who's to his left?
Well, Beto was to his left on guns, but he's not going to be a factor any longer.
Right? I mean, so.
Also, the governor of.
You can make an argument that Bloomberg has embraced the Green New
Deal. I don't think he's embraced that. I agree.
So that's one area where he actually is more to the center than she is.
You know, in the smoke-filled room, you'd say, on paper, Bloomberg has the right balance of what you want to win a broad election. Maybe not a deep election, but if you're trying to win the ex-suburban Republican, which by the way, Michael Bloomberg's an ex-suburban, arguably an ex-urban Republican, and at the same time, you care about these core progressive issues like guns and climate, it ain't just somebody buying an election.
No, that's exactly what it is. Well, first of all, I guess it's not because he's not gonna win, but it is an attempt to buy an election. So Chuck Todd was speaking sort of longingly, hypothetically, but longingly about smoke-filled rooms and believed that, like, yeah, we're all just waiting for someone who embraces core progressive values, and that person is a former Republican, current billionaire.
The smoke-filled room is bad. The Democratic Party supporters had riots because of smoke-filled rooms. That was back when you had a party apparatus that said, him, always a man, him. He is our choice, and the reason for that is they never believed that the riffraff in their party was competent or capable to choose a candidate that was viable in an election. And also, I guess I have to restate my opinion because of the silence that met Chuck Todd when he was like, we got an answer, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone was just like, and he's like, who's more progressive than Bloomberg with the climate? And then someone said he doesn't support the Green New Deal, which is just the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. And Chuck says words that seem like he is ceding that point, but then proceeds as if he hasn't ceded that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he goes right back to it. Oh, you know, and then he tries to get this ex-suburban voter. No, man, he is a New York City billionaire mayor. Mm-hmm. And what Trump is able to get around in terms of what you would assume would be affiliated with a billionaire from New York, Trump gets around that by acting like an idiot, around the water cooler kibitzing moron.
Yeah.
But Bloomberg is boring.
Mm-hmm.
Bloomberg is wildly very boring. And that's what's frustrating, is that Chuck Todd doesn't see that. He talks about it being on paper. He talks about the smoke-filled room. But on paper, if you're saying that I want to run some kind of corporate moderate against Donald Trump, like, we already have the data for that.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton lost. And all these things, when I say it's frustrating about watching the media talk it out, the media says, like, we got to get a viable moderate, just someone less right than Trump. And it's like, we tried it and it failed.
Well, and also, if you're like, you're looking out to the primary, I know he's talking about the general election there, but if you're looking to the primary, it's not like there's nobody who wants a centrist Democrat. There are people. Biden is still inexplicably doing well. He's either in first or occasionally in second in the polling. And, you know, Amy Klobuchar gets 2% or whatever. But together, Warren and Bernie get a way bigger percentage of the electorate. So it's not like there's tons of people just calling out for a bigger centrist or a richer centrist or an older centrist.
There is a fetishization of this concept of, we got a bigger billionaire than you.
Oh,
so
yeah,
Lizzo
totally,
is just gushing about it right now. Oh, Trump, we're gonna beat Trump because Trump's gonna talk trash against this guy, but it's gonna be different because this person is richer than Trump and it'll drive him nuts. Counterpoint to that is what Elizabeth Warren has been doing with billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the mainstream media is like, oh my God, Bill Gates. Bill Gates doesn't like Elizabeth Warren. Let's report on that. Let's go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Warren has done a very wise thing. It's the same thing that Bernie Sanders did in the last go around and continues to do, which is like, listen, if I have billionaires hating me, as much as I don't like people to hate me, that's a good group of people to have hate me.
I welcome their hate.
Yeah, it's good. What, do people have a positive association with billionaires? Most don't.
Yeah, I would say most, yes. And so let's just jump to Donald Trump was gonna obviously say something about this guy. And I agree that having a bigger billionaire doesn't win you the election. But I also agree with Chris Saliza that Trump will lose his mind.
He will.
About
He'll
it.
Lose his mind. But
so he said, little Michael will fail. He thought about it really hard and he came up with Little as the nickname. It's a new one. Little Michael will fail. He's not going to do well, but I think he's going to hurt Biden, actually. There's nobody I'd rather run against than Little Michael. He's an alpha male. That's a strong man right there. You should pattern your masculinity and teach your children to be more like Trump when they grow up. So that's what he said. But why is he running? There's a lot of explanations. This is probably not actually one, but it is interesting that the more and more talk there is about the wealth tax and what effect it would have on billionaires, and then all of a sudden Bloomberg is running. I mean, that Bill Gates thing has been all over the place. In any event, substantively, if Bernie's wealth tax was law last year, Bloomberg would have owed over $4 billion more in taxes. So it would have had a big effect on him. And under Warren's math, Bloomberg would have paid a little bit more than $3 billion more in wealth taxes each year. But the site that she has produced so that you can calculate how it would affect you says, good news, you'll still be extraordinarily rich. Which is true. And so Bill Gates is attacking her. Anna has been having a lot of fun playing the tape of that billionaire crying on TV. Mm-hmm. There is this, you know, the billionaires strike back thing going on right now.
Yeah, and that's a loser. The billionaires crying over being less of over being still billionaires in the wake of all this.
Yeah.
That's not a winner for them.
No.
And any win that billionaires can claim for being philanthropic, at least from a policy standpoint, in terms of not just doing like outside philanthropic work, which is great and I welcome it, but like changing how much you pay your employees. And by that I mean Jeff Bezos changing to $15 an hour. He did that because of pressure from progressive candidates.
From Bernie Sanders.
From Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna getting out there and saying, here's what's wrong with the economy. There's a wild wealth disparity. Here's how we can fix it. And we need to do it with you guys changing your policy.
Yeah.
So here is the theoretical and here is the practical. Make a practical change to aid this theoretical goal. And that happened. And it wasn't because of billionaires being like, I want to be your friend without any pressure.
Exactly.
It is because their invisible hand of the market was forced by a very visible hand in Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna.
I agree. And I mean, we will see how Michael Bloomberg does if he does enter it. I don't think it's going to end up being the best use of his money. I'll say that. I think I feel pretty confident in saying that, that we've already seen that with Tom Steyer and Howard Schultz. But that said, we're going to take a break. We come back, another candidate, Andrew Yang, has his first big media push. We're going to evaluate his first ad after this. Andrew Yang had a great fundraising quarter last quarter, raising far more than most people expected. And he's now going to turn that into his first big media push with this commercial.
The son of immigrants who came here seeking the American dream, Andrew Yang. His parents taught him about hope and hard work, a leader in education. Andrew Yang, the founder of Venture for America, a nonprofit that helped create thousands of jobs. President Obama named Andrew a champion of change, and his ideas are a blueprint for a new way forward. An economy where big tech and Wall Street are held accountable. A healthcare system with Medicare for all that takes on drug companies to lower prices. A fight against climate change that confronts big polluters.
We have to rewrite the rules of the 21st century so that they work for us.
Andrew Yang, parent, patriot, not a politician. A new leader who understands that what's coming is the greatest economic transformation in history and who can lead us in the fight for the future that we want. For President Andrew Yang, a new way forward.
I'm Andrew Yang and I approve this message.
Okay, so if you live in Iowa, get ready to see that ad a bunch because they're going to be spending $1 million to run it statewide in Iowa over the next week. Iowa ad space is never more valuable than in the next month or two. So I had not seen the ad yet. I wanted to see it fresh. I think it's pretty good.
I think it's good.
I think like for what he wants and needs to do, I think it's pretty effective.
Everyone can show a sunrise, but not everyone can show a sunrise from space.
That's true.
That was my favorite shot at the end. I like hearing Andrew Yang's voice. Like it just like it, when they say not a politician, and then it's like just some guy say, we had to rewrite the rules, and it's just I like. There's this metric by which you need to evaluate a politician based on how most people evaluate someone running, which is just like vibe. And Andrew Yang has a good vibe.
He has a good vibe.
Palatable vibe. Who has the best vibe for Iowa? Sad to say, Pete Buttigieg has the best vibe for Iowa. I would measure the cadence of an Iowa caucus goer and what they would be most receptive to. To Pete Buttigieg, just someone who sits there and is like, I'm a nice person. I'm not a mean person. I like to sit and communicate with people and just communicate ideas. And there's also a sit down and hang out and talk shop that Andrew Yang has, I think would work well in Iowa.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought it was. It wasn't like a crazily inventive.
It's the sort of, you can read articles about how this was created. Obviously, his campaign strategy up to this point has not been traditional in a number of ways, and it's worked out for him. But he is transitioning into wanting it to be more traditional. So he's hired people who've worked with Obama and Clinton and a bunch of, and Bernie Sanders, by the way. And they're like explicitly trying to create professional looking ads that fit the template that you've seen before. So as you point out, there's gonna be a tractor and a sunrise, but there's also robots.
But there's also
which you don't normally see.
Kids running in slow-mo over fields while wearing hats with feathers in them. I don't know what that was, but yes,
that's
it
fine.
Is.
You gotta show a family. He gets to show his family and stuff. I think one of the high points, like, or one of the what they want to be a high point is the Obama quote. I mean, if you have Obama calling you a champion of change, that's obviously something you're gonna wanna stress. And if he was Joe Biden, he'd never stop saying it. But anyway, I think it's also interesting, we should note, it didn't focus on universal basic income. There was a reference to universal basic income, but only as much as there was to Medicare for All and transforming economy and tech and blah, blah, blah.
And more to the point of identifying yourself as someone who is, I think it's more to the goal of identifying yourself as a candidate in ways that you would recognize candidates running. Mm-hmm. And one of those is to list subjects. The subjects he listed, or the issue areas, and the subjects he listed were very like Medicare for All, check. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't know how effective it is anymore. Mm. I don't know how effective television advertising is anymore, but I think you will not just see this on television, you'll see it on your Facebook feed and everything.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, I didn't notice the universal basic income references whatsoever. I noticed
it was brief. It was like it was on the screen, universal basic income.
Yeah.
But they didn't focus on it, which is good. He wants to broaden his appeal. And that's why I was like on the main show, I was talking about there are things a candidate can do to make their supporters love them more, and there's things they can do to broaden their appeal. These are not always the same thing. They're probably not often the same thing. He's doing the thing that raises the chance that he can get more people in Iowa to support him. When I was talking about Tulsi Gabbard talking about Hillary Clinton's attacks against her, I get you wanting to defend yourself, but that's not how you get 15% more of Iowa to support you. And so I think he's going with a more traditional path. His candidacy has been non-traditional up until this point, but he also wants to present himself as a guy who has the gravitas to be president, everything. I'm not gonna do the thing where everybody in the media pretends to like support him so that they can get his supporters to give him money and clicks and stuff. I don't support Andrew Yang. I think he has interesting ideas, but I don't support him in large part because he's not a regular progressive like the ones that I support. He doesn't agree on certain really important issues. But on some, he wants to make sure that you know that he does, which is why Medicare for All is a huge
climate
thing there. Exactly. Was there something about climate in there?
Yeah, there was pollution ending.
Okay, good. Okay, I actually missed that. Okay, good. That's good.
But yeah,
Andrew. So I think it's effective for what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. With that, why don't we go to someone who is effective for what he wants to do, which is a slightly different thing, different goals. We're gonna jump to Glenn Beck here. Glenn Beck has been pretty effectively in the shadows the past few years. A lot of right-wing media online has evolved past him, but he still does have certain skills, and that's that when he wants to craft an insane narrative, he's one of the best at it. And so here he is talking about the whistleblower who he believes should fear death, but not for the reasons you might think.
It is critical that this whistleblower makes it to an open witness stand, and the cross-examination is prepared to ask him about all of the things that he was doing in Ukraine, because he's the linchpin. He's the go-between on all of these things, on Fusion GPS, on the Joe Biden corruption, on all of it. He is the accountant. Now, the press, I've never seen anything like it, and it felt weird at the time. As soon as they started talking about this whistleblower, and they said, well, who is the whistleblower? The minute that question was asked, you're gonna get him killed. You're gonna get him killed. Wait, we're just wondering who he is. You're gonna get him killed. You're gonna get him killed, you're gonna get him killed, you're gonna get him killed. Well, now I know why. This guy is more dangerous to the DNC than Jeffrey Epstein. If this guy isn't protected, not from the right, but from the left, this guy's gonna end up hanging himself with paper sheets while in custody. This guy is the buried body. He knows all of it. He's the tie between all of it.
So the crazy thing about some of these online right-wing things is they're very dangerous in that if you watch a bunch of it, They're good at manipulating people. And so if you watch 6 months of The Blaze, maybe you watch that clip and it makes sense to you. But when you just jump into it in the middle, it's like, what are you talking about? The left wants to kill him because this guy who you didn't even know his name until yesterday, I guess. I don't know anything about him, but I feared him being killed, not for what he knew about the president, but what he knows about like fusion GPS. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, the go-between. I don't even know what that means. This is what the whistleblower has done, has said, here's a bunch of reports of what people said about this call. And here's what I know about this call. And all the things that other people have said about the call, they've testified to.
And confirmed what the whistleblower said about the call.
Confirmed what the whistleblower said. And nothing is weird. It is the idea that the left, and he's just saying the opposite of what he wants people, you know, of what's true. That's it, which is lying. But also he says it's like, no man, the other side should be scared, man. It's just such nonsense. And when he says like, why is the left saying you're gonna get him killed? It's like, well, because every mass act of violence against anyone really in the last year was done by right-wing extremists. Like, if you want to name Cesar Sayoc, was a guy who heard Trump say these people are bad and then sent bombs to them.
Yeah.
So if you want, you can either, if you want to answer that question, you can either come up with one on your own or you could just ask it and get the answer.
Yeah.
The answer is the right seems to inspire and foment violent instincts in other people to do their dirty work for them potentially. And if this guy dies as a result of someone being inspired by the president to go kill him.
Yeah.
That's what we're afraid of because also, it's happened before.
One other reason, this is we forget everything that happens because so much happens. But do you recall that early on Donald Trump said this guy's not a whistleblower, he's a spy. And do you remember what we used to do to spies? Maybe that's why we're worried about him being killed, because the president joked himself about the death penalty for spies.
Yeah.
Oh, Glenn Beck. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. Stick around. I want to break down for you right now a case of almost impossible to comprehend human cruelty, and it has to do with Bobby Paul Edwards. Prosecutors say that he, a man who managed his family's restaurant, forced Chris Smith, an intellectually disabled black man, to work for free and live in a small room behind that restaurant. Court documents show that Edwards physically abused Smith for at least 17 years, including whipping him with a belt, beating him with pots and pans, and burning him with hot grease. Chris Smith started at the restaurant when he was only 12 years old, but later when Edwards took over as manager, he decided to stop paying Smith, saying that instead he was keeping the pay in an account that Smith could not access. Now you might wonder, how was this a situation that could be sustained? Well, when Smith's family would try to check on him, Edwards would lock Smith in the kitchen or even in the freezer. If Smith tried to escape, he would be beaten with a frying pan, burned with hot tongs, beaten with belt buckles while racial slurs were yelled at him repeatedly. Customers apparently heard some of this, and it still went on for years and years and years. Chris Smith said, I wanted to get out of there a long time ago, but I didn't have nobody I could go to. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't see none of my family, so that was that. That's the main basic thing I wanted to see was my mom to come see me. And so after all of this was revealed and all of it was proven, Edwards was sentenced to 10 years. And he's gonna have to pay some money in restitution. Depending on when you define the beginning of it, he effectively enslaved this man, kidnapped him, would not let him go while he beat him for 17 to 23 years. And he got a 10-year sentence.
The idea that the punishment would be less time than the amount of time he effectively enslaved this man for is
insane.
I don't understand how you can do that. I don't understand how you can do that at all. To take someone's freedom away who didn't deserve it, I feel like you should be punished for at least the same amount of time.
Yeah.
But my instinct would be for every day that you took this man's freedom away, you owe two.
At the very least.
At the very least.
Yeah.
And the restitution, I mean, good God, 17 years and it's $270,000.
Yeah, well, two extra layers of injustice on this. One, the Edwards family still owns the restaurant. They can still, they're different management, I guess, but they can still own it. And two, the same attorney, so the presiding person in this case who gave him 10 years, the next day there was a man, Aaron Jordan, who was a 28-year-old who was stopped by cops because of the smell of marijuana, did have some drugs and prescription pills and fire in his car, got 12 years in prison. More, 20% more than the guy who enslaved someone for 17 to 23 years. Crazy how the justice system works. So this is as much justice as we have come to expect in this sort of situation, but hopefully in the future, this will be the aberration that it should be now. Anyway, sorry for the pressing story to end the day, but thank you for ending it with Ehrlich.
Thank you very much. Everyone watch Happy Half Hour. We got Amelia Barras, who wrote
on
Veep.
Should be a lot of fun. Awesome. And thank you everybody who's been watching throughout the week. Obviously big things planned for next week, so have a fun weekend and we'll see you come Monday morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.